Alan Quinn Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 21, delivered on April 17, 2017. The title of this lecture is Cost of Capital.
Today, cost of capital. When I say capital structure, I mean the combination of debt and equity that finances the firm. Again, capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that finances the firm. The combination of debt and equity that finances the firm. Now, if I've repeated it three times, that might give you an idea that this is kind of important. Cost of cap. Capital structure. Wow. The title of the lecture is Cost of Capital. Now, you already know that the terms debt and equity are somewhat generic to the extent that there are different kinds of debt and there are different kinds of equity. The fundamental equation of accounting breaks the assets of a corporation down into the liabilities and the owner's equity. Now, there is short-term obligations that are in liabilities, like your wages payable, dividends payable, things like that in your liabilities. Accounts payable, current portion of long-term debt. But when I'm talking about debt and equity, I'm generally referring in the debt to long and intermediate term debt. So if I said, how much debt does the company carry? You would find the long-term debt and add to that the notes payable, the notes. Typically, interestingly enough, a lot of financial statements, all they do is list the long-term debt. They don't break down notes in there. But debt, I mean, there's senior debt, junior debt, senior subordinated, mortgage debt, ETCs, all those kinds of things. And then in the equity, you have your common stock and your preferred stock. Now, in the common stock, you can actually have several different varieties. There's this, like, founder stock, Class A stock, like Ford Motor Company has this inside stock. No one can get to that, but there's a lot of that out there. But anyway, on a more generic level, and bear with me, I will want to wake up this computer if it wants to wake up, and show you just on financial statements what you're looking at here. And I'll show you this in a minute, just to put some practicality behind it. But I showed you earlier in the course that debt actually magnifies the return on equity. That's called gains to leverage. In general, you're going to hear the term leverage. This actually in finance has some pretty heavy-duty meaning behind it. But as a more generic business term, leverage refers to how much debt you're using in your capital structure. So in other words, I could say something like capital structure 30% debt, 70% equity. That's a really, really broad-based term. But it gives you an idea. I'm going to do something here real quick. I probably should have checked this before I went too far with it, but going to SEC.gov, why would I want that up there? SEC.gov, that was weird. One of the officers of the club shows up. Okay. SEC.gov. Filings. Really? Company search. And I'm going to just pull out of the hat Netflix, NFLX, and pull their 10K, which is actually fairly new, and look at their financial statements and go down to their balance sheet. Okay, here. This actually isn't too bad. Okay, look. The total assets right now are at the 10K, 13.6 billion in total assets. Now, of those, the equity portion of it is 2.7 billion, and the debt portion would therefore be 13.6 minus 2.7 would be 9. Okay, so that'd be 12 minus 0, 10.9 billion in debt. Okay, so now I can actually say, pull out the calculator, and I can say that 10.9 divided by 13.6 is about 80.2%. Oh, about 80%. And so the equity is 20%. So this company is actually heavily leveraged. Mostly you won't see companies with this much debt in their capital structure. And it's strange that you don't, and I'm going to explain that in a minute. But Netflix is really heavily leveraged. And notice that term that I used, heavily leveraged. In other words, it uses a lot of debt. Now, the risk of that is if they can't pay their debt, then they're out of business. So this company is exposed to a lot of risk with a capital structure this steeply tilted toward debt. But at the same time, with that much debt, the gains to leverage on the equity is going to have its ROE magnified enormously. So it's kind of a mixed bag here, how this company is playing. Let me pull up just another one, right? I'm kind of curious, what cat? Oh, that was not what I wanted. Caterpillar. I want to put it over here. Cat. Okay, there's their 10K. And going to the financial statements and looking for the balance sheet. Financial. I can't even read anymore. Is there some reason my eyes can't see a balance sheet? Is that it? Well, why don't they just call it a balance sheet? Consolidated financial position, for heaven's sakes. Really? That's my cat going in front of the mirror. That's supposed to be off. Okay. Assets. So assets for cat. This is NFLX. Cat. Assets. What was that again? That was 74.7 billion. And then the equity and the debt. Equity, taking it down, notice how I back into the debt. The total stockholders' equity is 13.2 billion. So the debt, wow, okay, 5. Okay, 4 minus 3 is 1. 7 minus 1. So here again is another pretty leveraged firm. That's pretty considerable, that leverage there. I was kind of hoping for one that wasn't quite that. Okay, 13.2 divided by 74.7. 17.7. Wow. And the remainder would be %72.3. 82. Holy cats. These are both very heavily leveraged. In other words, every dollar that the company earns for its shareholders is magnified considerably for a company like this. So there's that creates more risk, of course, again, because if you can't pay your interest payments on your debt, you're out of business. But it also creates that greater expected return from a company like this. It's kind of interesting that I'm seeing these companies that are pretty strongly leveraged catching of several of those, but there you are. Okay, now, the math of this is not hard, but I do encourage you, you're going to want to make sure that you can do the math. Cost. Cost of capital. Debt and equity. Now, I will get into the math, heavy math, in the next lecture. Well, it's not even heavy, but I'll hit it here, and then I'll drop back, and then I'll do it again on Wednesday. But let me show you something here. When I go to a bank, Let me show you something here. Going to Caterpillar's consolidated results of operations. You go through all of these grinds, okay, cost of goods sold and all your other costs, and you get your operating profit, and then from there, your, what am I looking for here? There you go. Interest expense. See it right there? That is deducted pre-tax, which means that your interest payments represent a shield against taxation. For every dollar here, I don't pay the tax rate times that dollar down there. See where the taxes are? Yeah, where are the taxes? Is there some reason I can't find the taxes? Okay, taxes, right there. Okay, so that basically right there, operating profit is your earnings before interest and taxes. Then you take out the interest, and then you're left with your earnings before taxes. Then you take out your taxes, and you got your profit. Here's the thing. Again, the interest expense is tax deductible. You get a tax shield that you don't get when you pay a dividend to the shareholders. Dividends are paid post-tax. There's no shield. There is nothing to protect that income. You're just giving away expensive money to the shareholders. Debt. So in other words, if I give you a coupon, if my debt has a coupon, let's say 8%, and my tax bracket for last dollar I earn in that corporation is 25%. The 8% is my cost of debt. Oops, I'm sorry, I'm going to make that a K. My cost of debt is 8%. But that's not what I pay. The after-tax cost of debt which is the only thing that matters to me, is K sub D times 1 minus the marginal tax rate. Debt is cheap, comparatively speaking. So in other words, in this case, my after-tax cost of debt is going to be 8% times 1 minus 0.25, because 25% of that is a shield from taxes. So in this case, my after-tax cost of debt is only 6%. Is only 6%. Here's what that means. Well, let me do it in two pieces. First things first, that makes debt very attractive compared to equity, because equity, you pay, your profit is taxed, your dividends have already been taxed, and they're going to be taxed again when the people get a dividend. It's taxed to the people who get it at their ordinary income tax rate. So, I mean, there's almost no logic to equity, because it doesn't have this protection. But there's something else that is insidious about our tax code. Because the higher the EBT, the higher the taxable income, the higher your marginal tax bracket. So if you were to look at it like this, your tax shield, on debt, for a company that would be in the 15% marginal tax bracket, your tax shield is 1 minus 0.15. Is 0.15, I'm sorry. The tax shield, 0.15. 25%, your tax, you are protected. 25% of your interest is deducted away. You don't pay tax on it. A company in the 35% tax bracket, the shield rises to 35%. So in other words, for a little company, their after-tax cost of debt is 8% times 0.8, 0.15. K sub D A T. For this company, it would be 8% times 1 minus 0.15. For this company, it would be 8% times 1 minus 0.25. The cost of debt for this very large, profitable corporation is 8% times 0.35. Do you see how the shield is going up the richer the corporation is? In other words, large corporations have a comparative advantage to using debt over small corporations. In other words, a company like mine gets a paltry discount of 15% on my debt. Exxon gets a massive, nearly 40% protection on its debt. This means that our tax code favors the use of debt the larger the corporation. Which, of course, also means that if that leverage creates more risk, it invites risk to the largest animals in the pantheon of corporations. When you hear too big to fail, you've got a massive multinational bank in the highest marginal tax bracket using debt, exposing itself to extraordinary risk at the risk of the entire global economy. Caterpillar, a very large corporation, If it has a high marginal tax bracket, which it doesn't right now, but if it did, it would be encouraged to use large amounts of debt, far more debt than a little company that would get only a little bit of a tax break. The cost of capital to my company is higher than it is to a huge company, merely because that huge company makes a lot more profit than my little company does. Our tax code favors that. Now, here's where it kicks in even harder. We have a progressive tax code. That's why the more money, the higher the tax. But that also applies to individuals and households. So if you've got a household that makes over $1 million a year, their mortgage interest is tax deductible. And that tax shield is huge for them. A low-income family, working lower middle class family, in a low tax bracket, they get hardly any shield from the mortgage interest deductibility, which means that they are, by our tax code, disfavored for home ownership, while rich people are favored for ownership. If you've got the same mortgage, two families are have the same mortgage, 5.5%, 9% APR, that's the cost of debt for the mortgage, a home mortgage. So you've got one family in a, let's say, a 15% marginal tax bracket. Their after-tax cost of debt is going to be 5.59% times 1 minus 0.15. The family in a 35% marginal tax bracket, their after-tax cost of debt is going to be 5.59% times 1 minus 0.35. The mortgage is cheaper for the rich family than it is for the poor family. And as a result of that, we see that ownership by wealthy is far, far higher than it is for poor people, which is counterproductive to the extent that we know home ownership is one of the deciding factors in crime rates in a neighborhood. It's a deciding factor in how nice the neighborhood is. It's a deciding factor in the educational level achieved by the children from those households. And yet we encourage the rich to own and the poor to live in rental housing. That's how serious this issue is. And we can't get anyone in Washington to pay attention to this. The ideal would be to take away the tax deductibility of home mortgages. And in fact, we don't do that. We encourage even more because rich people can buy two homes and both of those mortgages' interest is tax deductible. We just make pile it on. But back to the corporations, we encourage, by the after-tax cost of debt phenomenon, we encourage large profitable corporations to heavily leverage far more than we do small corporations. As a matter of fact, for a company like mine, it's almost not worth debt in the capital structure because why should I expose myself to debt if I'm getting no break on it over equity or hardly any break? I will find a way to ask you about this. Get this in your notes clearly. I will find a way to ask you. Why debt favors profitable, large profitable corporations over small corporations? Why debt is favored by larger corporations over smaller corporations? What is it that drives this? And there is one of the driving factors right there. Look at the two companies I just showed you. They are huge companies, and my heavens, their leverage is surprisingly high. In other words, they don't use a lot of stockholder money. They use a lot of borrowed money. They get the gains to leverage, but they also expose themselves to substantial risk in the deal. So, And actually, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you just take the rate of expected rate of return is just the change in price from now until then divided by the current price.
The price now from the 1 year.
Yeah, price now, you look up. Price in 1 year. So you just take 25 minus 20 over 20. And that'll be your percentage. End minus begin over begin. That gives you your return on equity, which actually kind of fits in here. Equity. As a rule. Well, matter of fact, let me show you something. You say equity, and actually the one I did there, 5 over 20, is... That's a pretty heavy one. That's about 20%. No, it's not, actually. Let's say you have price now, price in 1 year, is 20 and 25 respectively. So $25 minus $20 over $20, that's 5 over 20 is a 25%. Yield on the equity. That's not unusual. Shareholders expect a very high return compared to the banks and the other kinds of lenders. A lender, when you see a coupon on a bond, right now, I mean, 6% would be a pretty typical coupon on a bond. And then that would be your cost of debt, case of D. And then if, let's say this company is in the 25% marginal tax bracket, so the after-tax cost of debt, what the company actually really pays, would be 6% times 1 minus 0.25, which is, really? I can't even do that in my head anymore. What is it? 4.5%. Thank you. I could have done that. I just want to see if you could do it. Okay. So there is your company's after-tax cost of debt, 4.5%. That's what the investors, the lenders, expect. Well, then we calculate these returns on equity of 15, 20, 25, 30, 40%. ROEs. That is, in other words, what the investors want. They want that much. Equity investors want more than debt investors. Can you think of a reason why that would be? Why are equity investors so precious about getting big returns compared to debt investors? What's the difference? And I've already covered this, and I'm just going back over because you probably don't remember, do you?
They don't have the prior claim.
Oh, my God, you do. Someone give him an Oreo cookie, the double cream filling. You see, debt is safer than equity. Lower risk, lower expected return. So, I mean, the debt holder, the lending, if I lend you money, I know I've got the first claim to any money you make. But you, one of my owners, I mean, I don't really have to give you anything. You've done nothing for me, so I do nothing for you. That's a big thing, because for you are taking much greater risk. And for greater risk, you are going to expect a higher return. That's why equity is more expensive than debt. Then you add in that tax deductibility of debt, and it gets even more ridiculous. At the end of the day, equity is an extraordinarily expensive way to raise capital. And that's why in finance, we are not accountants. We see your profit, and you've made a profit in your corporation. You make a profit? Well, you know what that means is that you have just cost me money. The corporation is me. You, an owner, are an expensive friend. That profit, it belongs to you. It's not the corporation, it's you. I owe it to you as dividends or capital gains, whatever, I owe it to you. In other words, you are an expensive liability. In Europe, I don't know if they brought this up to you in your accounting class. We in the United States, in our accounting, we say liabilities and owner's equity. If you look at a European financial statement, they say internal liabilities and external liabilities. External liabilities are what we call liabilities. Internal liabilities are what we call equity. They see it for what it is. You are a liability. I mean, if you weren't so, you know, intelligent and witty and attractive and all that, sir, I would be... that grizzled beard is what does it for you. It really does, you know. I tried that once, and all I got was this thing that looked, made me look like mange. I had mange. But you understand what I'm saying is that, I mean, you're an expensive accoutrement to my company. Debt is cheaper than equity for two reasons. One is debt has the prior claim, just what you said, and the other is that debt is the interest expense from debt is tax deductible. You remember those two because those are, that is a classic exam two question. See how I'm bringing everything together now? It's all coming together in one consolidated lecture. I'm basically handing you the questions. They call me Pizza Hut because I deliver, and I'm delivering you the answers. I've given you two questions right here, and I gave you one last time. Wow. Paste a cottontail on me and call me the Easter Bunny. Okay. Now, this brings up a really strange kind of question that was posed many years ago. In the two decades after World War II, there was like this shockwave of mathematics and thinking in the discipline of finance. A lot of the understanding that it's just physics, engineering, all that came about. And then there was another wave in the 1980s. Late 70s, early 80s, but this understanding that everything in our, what we do is actually just kind of like a mathematical thing. So a couple of researchers, they were finance people. There's some unfortunate stories about their attempts to go into the real world with their knowledge, but at least one of them. The two were, you don't have to write down their names, I think they're in the book, Modigliani and Miller. They laid out a ridiculous question, but it was one that we had to answer. It was one of those bizarre kinds of questions. Years ago, I climbed up on the roof. I was a depressed teenager. I crawled out on the sliding roof of outside my the window on the second floor of my house. In the middle of the night, I was just so internally torn up, and I just cried out to the night sky, "Why am I here?" This old guy down the street leans out his window and says, "Because you climbed out there, you moron." And then this dog started barking, and I heard his wife tell him to get back to bed. I didn't get my question answered, but this one we had to answer. You say, how is that so random? Okay, Modigliani and Miller said, why do companies have equity? Why would we see a corporation that wasn't 100% debt? If debt is cheaper than equity, why don't we see 100% debt? In other words, it's actually kind of a simple graph. Look, suppose that here is the after-tax cost of debt. Case on a vertical axis. And on the horizontal axis is the percent of debt in the capital structure. in the capital structure. And here would be 100% debt. Okay, here is, let's say, the cost of equity, case of E. It's much higher than the after-tax cost of debt. We know that. So if you were to think about it, if we use pure equity and 0% debt, the cost of our capital would be the cost of equity, because that's all we used was equity. If we used 100% debt and zero equity, then the cost of our capital would be KATD, the after-tax cost of debt. It's a simple straight line. You use 0% debt, you're going to pay K sub E. If you use 100% debt, you're going to pay KATD. So in other words, the more debt in your capital structure, the lower your cost of capital. So their proposition, the Modigliani-Miller proposition, was this. We should see all companies 100% debt. Anything that would be less than 100% debt would have a higher cost. It would have a higher cost. So, I mean, you know, obviously we see companies that have equity. Some have mostly equity. Some have less equity, but we see equity. That's something we teach is equity in corporations. We call it common stock. And yet here we have this clear indication that that should not happen. Something is missing from the model. Something we're not seeing prevents companies from charging to 100% debt. So what would that possibly be? Well, it didn't take us long to figure that out. But oddly enough, when I started consulting, I saw it for myself. It was actually kind of interesting to see the answer in real life. I was helping a company get money together. They were going to do, what was it they were going to do? I remember. It was the strangest project, and I can talk about it after all these years, the non-disclosure is gone. They had these giant, enormous modular blocks that were sort of like two thin walls. And what they would do is they'd put these together, and then they would fill these in between with this foam that turned into like a steel. And then they would slide off with a giant crane all of these blocks, and there'd be a house. Hard as a rock. I mean, it was harder than stone. And I mean, they'd have basement. You could even put in a basement and fill the foam in between the dirt and the template wall. And I mean, it was an incredibly cool project. And here's what was interesting about it was, we worked it out, and they wanted to raise $1 million on what's called a Reg D 504, so they wouldn't have to do a lot of filings with the SEC. But they also were going to need about as much as, and this was the difficult part, because we did not know some of the costs, we just could not project them logically. We knew we would have $1 million in equity. And then somewhere between 250 and 700,000 in debt. Just didn't know exactly how much it was going to be, though. It was going to be based on several factors that we would actually have to go into full production to understand better. Or limited production. So we made an overture to a bank. It was a regional bank, and here's how they laid it out for us. From $1 through $100,000, they would charge us at the rate of 10.9%. I'm almost sure these are the numbers. from 100,000 up through 250,000, they would charge us 14.5%. And for anything over 250,000, they would charge us 20.1%. In other words, the cost of debt was not static. It was actually going up as the amount of debt they borrowed went up. The logic being that the higher the amount of debt, the more risk there was that the corporation wouldn't pay it back. So in other words, in the Modigliani-Miller world, the cost of debt stays the same. But in the real world, after a certain point in time, the cost of debt begins to rise. Realistically, at $250,000, that was about the cost of equity to us. No, not really, but it was getting there. But what was clear was that this was the answer to the Modigliani-Miller paradox, was that debt doesn't stay down here. The cost of debt doesn't stay down here. It actually turns upward the more you borrow, because the lenders are going to charge you a higher rate as you progressively borrow more money. We see this in corporate bond issues too. The first $100 million a company issues in bonds, they'll get one coupon, but then after that, they have to pay more for their coupon to attract the investors. So that right there is the actual profile. The simple theory makes it look like this, but the reality of it is that it looks sort of like that. We've tracked many, many corporations, thousands. We see this. Now, the interesting thing is this. When we do these kinds of charts for real-life corporations, sometimes we'll see the weighted average cost of capital. And that's what these are, by the way. Is these are weighted average cost of capital. We'll see the WACC go down for a lot of debt, but only when it gets pretty close to 100% does it start to turn upward. For other companies, I mean, it's like almost any debt at all, and they're going to knock the crap out of you. The lenders are. And then there's some that are just a nice balance, about 50-50, the bottoming point occurs. But here's the important point. You see that bottoming out point where the weighted average cost of capital is at its minimum? We call that place the optimal capital structure. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. Again, the optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. The optimal capital structure. Do you notice how many times I'm repeating this one? Get a clue about how likely this one is. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. Now, I can't say this for all companies, but I can tell you from my own. When I borrow money to build my inventory during the cold months, and then I pay it off as my revenues pick up through the arts festival seasons in the spring, summer, and early fall. The first time when I went in, I got a it's like a revolving line of credit. They call it a cash working capital management account. I asked for a largest line. My top, I said, I need $2,000. And now interest rates have kind of shifted over, but it was at about 6.5%. It was something like that. Up to that amount of money, I could borrow for 6.5%. And believe me, I maxed out that account right away. I just blew through it and then wished I'd asked for more. But I paid it off. And so I came back the next year and I said, my experience, and I showed him my financials, I said, I'm going to need $5,000. And they were okay with that. It was actually a little cheaper. It was about 6.1%, but that was probably because interest rates had slid by that time in the economy. Well, as years went on, I can tell you now I've got an exposure of $20,000. And they say up to $5,000, 7%. From $5,000 to $15,000, anything you borrow between $5,001 and $15,000, you have to pay 12%. And anything above $15,000, and they'll let me borrow up to $40,000, you will pay 19.98%. There it is. In other words, in tiers, T-I-E-R-S, they actually assess the debt, cost of your debt, in terms of how much debt you are using. There's that weighted average cost of capital thing. I'm seeing it in my own business. It's real. So that's the answer, is that the reason we don't see pure debt as the corporate solution to optimal capital structure is because there's some point where debt actually does become more expensive, because you are at greater risk of losing it. Look at this. Suppose that you've got a firm that makes $50,000 in revenue, minus expenses of, let's say, $35,000. So you've got $15,000 EBIT, that's operating income. Now suppose that I'm exposed to $5,000 in interest. So my earnings before taxes are $10,000. Clearly, I have enough money that I can pay my $5,000 interest payment. But what if I've borrowed so much that my interest payments are $10,000? Here, you see that I could lose, my revenue could swing pretty badly downward, and I would still be okay. I could still pay my interest payment. But if I have an interest payment of $10,000, I'm getting a little scared of my revenue swings. In other words, there's greater risk to the lender the more you're borrowing, because all sales are going to go up and down. I mean, that's just the reality of life. Your sales are going to go up and down. And when you've got not much interest to pay, then the debt holders don't have much to worry about. But when you're paying a lot of interest every year, man, it gets to be the point where you have to hustle to keep your EBIT, your operating income, above your interest. Because if it goes below that, you're in bankruptcy. So there is the logic behind why the weighted average cost of capital curve does that turn upward like it does. And, I mean, one last point I should make. Debt plus equity equals assets. Now, as I, and I just want to make this point, is that debt can fall into all kinds of different, like senior, junior, mortgage bonds, and ETCs, debentures, which are unsecured. There are a lot of different types of debt instruments that, when I say debt, I emphasize there are a lot of different kinds. If I go up here and look inside, normally when we calculate a debt-to-equity ratio or a debt-to-total assets ratio, we want to look only at the long-term debt. There we go. No, that's due after one. Okay, long-term debt. There it is. Here is Caterpillar's. So what you do is you would want to just look at only the the debt that's long-term to add those up if you want to do it for real. Here, machinery, energy, and transportation, those are most likely ETCs, equipment trust certificates. Financial products, those are probably bonds. And I'm not sure about this other liabilities here, but these would be the ones I'd focus on. The problem is, and let me go back here to show you this again. Let me pull up one more here. I don't think Target carries much debt, but I'm going to see real quick. Target just released its 10K pretty recently. Financial statements. Where's the statements of consult? Okay, here we go. Right here would be the one that you would use for the debt. If I showed you a financial statement and said, tell me the debt-to-equity ratio, you would want to probably key just on this little thing right here, long-term debt and other borrowings. I could look at others, but that's probably going to include your bonds and your notes right there. So don't kill yourself adding up all these, trying to figure out which ones are which, are these long-term debt or what. When we count debt, almost always we're looking for a line that says long-term debt or something that's just shows you that whatever is being the money is borrowed for is for long-term stuff. I'm just curious here. $10 billion. Oh. Notice that back of the envelope real quickly. Total shareholders' investment. That's another weird one I hadn't noticed before. Okay, so in this case, 10.953 divided by total assets of 37.431. Its total capital structure is 30% equity. And 70%, about 30% equity and 70% debt. So as you can see, at least for these very large corporations, these big animals, look at how much debt they carry. That is because the interest expense from the debt is tax deductible. It is also because the debt is going to be cheaper than the equity. Again, don't forget those two reasons. Why is debt cheaper than equity? Because it has a prior claim on the cash flows, which means it is lower risk, and you have to say both of those. And because interest expense from debt is tax deductible. So that means that debt is going to be favored, and it's going to be favored more by large corporations. I've been showing you these large corporations, 30% equity against 70% debt. You're not going to see those kinds of exposures for small corporations. It's just not worth it to them to do that. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.